Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Rugby Dungeon. Thank you for listening, thank you for subscribing. Most of all, thank you for leaving us reviews on iTunes. We really do appreciate it. As always, find us on Twitter. I'm at Jay Beardmore. This podcast is at the Rugby Dungeon. And of course, if you're involved with those two, you're going to want to be involved with the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast at Rugby Podcast. Get involved immediately. Today's episode is filmed on location. It sounds like an episode of Cheers, this. At Glasgow Warriors. Now, I went up to Glasgow, spent the whole day there, had a look around, met a few of the squad. Really impressive organisation. And the guy who's quite important this year is going to be Kenny Murray, because Kenny is one of the coaches. He's one of the few coaches to be retained by Glasgow, because everyone else has gone to Scotland. And then in their place, all the Scottish assistant coaches have kind of come into Glasgow. So Kenny is kind of the consistency guy between that move. At the moment, as you're well aware, they are awaiting the arrival of a rather interesting gentleman, Dave Rennie, who is clearly their star signing for this season. And in the meantime, they're all kind of getting on with stuff and preparing for what I think is going to be a very interesting season for the Warriors. So, I'm not going to talk any further. This is my interview with Kenny Murray. Hope you enjoy it. So, I'm here in Scotstoun, if that's how you say it, overlooking the magnificent 3G pitch, and I'm joined by Kenny Murray. How are you, Kenny?
Yeah, good. Nice to see you.
So, what have you been up to this morning?
We're obviously back in pre-season. We're in Monday to Friday at the moment. So, Wednesday is a lighter day, more of a recovery day. So, we had a... the first thing we did this morning, we had a meeting with Dave Rennie over Skype. A big transition year this year, with Dave still being involved with the Chiefs and obviously before he comes here. So I've been having regular Skype meetings with Dave, sometimes just with the coaches in terms of planning. But this morning, with all the Scotland boys returning, we had a full Skype meeting with Dave. So that was the first thing we did. And then we had a skill development half hour, which we do every Wednesday, sort of static skills. And then we had boys did some pool recovery, and then we had a learning session. So we do a sort of education morning on a Wednesday, and that involves, you know, just different things. Today it was the attack principles for next year. Last week we looked at some of our defence, and then we'll probably look at the new laws this week or next week as well. So we've got a lot to go through in pre-season.
Well, I want to get into all the stuff about the transition and Dave Rennie coming in, but before I do, I think it's fair to say you don't have the normal sort of CV for a top flight coach.
Yeah.
So could you just run me through how you find yourself here?
Yeah, obviously, I suppose I might be different from a lot of guys in the sense that I've never played professional rugby, never really played at the highest level at all rugby. Played rugby all my life since I was a sort of 12-year-old through school and then through adult rugby. When I finished school, I left. I went to university and studied sport. Got involved in sort of coaching pathway type thing there. And then when I finished university, got my degree in sport, I then became a rugby development officer. So I did that job for about 12 years before I became the regional development manager for rugby, so overseeing the development officers. My career then took me to be a senior sports development officer in Glasgow. So overseeing different sports, rugby, football, netball, etc. So big budgets, lots of staff, that sort of thing. Through all of that, I was coaching an amateur setup. So I coached it in my own club, Carfa Queen's Park, initially. And then I had 5 years at Ayr Rugby Club. So with both those clubs, we had a lot of success. with Weir, we won the championship twice, we won the Scottish Cup three times, we got to the quarter final of the British and Irish Cup. So during that, at the end of those 5 years, the opportunity came up within Glasgow Warriors to get a full-time coaching position. So I was interviewed by Gregor and Nathan, and I got that job. So yeah, it's an unusual one, I suppose, in terms of the modern day. I'm interested to see over the recent years coming how many more non-professional rugby players come into pro rugby.
Do you think coaching is getting to such a stage now that it's becoming a profession in its own right and not something which just ex-pros fall into?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that's the thing. I mean, coaching as a profession, I think people forget that.
Yeah.
The professionalisation of coaching has been happening for a whole number of years now across a lot of sports. And I think you can see the investment that goes into coaching across different sports now. Scottish Rugby have invested into it through, you know, even guys like myself. Mike Blair coming in now, and he's got a dual role with us and with Scotland. So there's a real focus on governing bodies across different sports to push coaches and develop them. But I think one thing I would say is we've got guys in our environment at the moment who are playing, guys like Pete Horn, for example, who are also involved in coaching.
Mm.
So Pete sees coaching as a potential opportunity for him as he finishes playing. It may or may not be a route that goes down, but at the moment he's helping coach one of the Premiership clubs, and he's also going through his coaching qualification. So I think that's one thing. Scottish Rugby are working well. They're getting a good blend of developing the coaches in the amateur game, but also supporting those pros that are wanting to be involved in coaching.
Do you find players that are going through their coaching badges understand more what you're trying to get out of them because they've been through the qualifications themselves?
Yeah, I think the big thing is the guys who do the coaching qualifications have a very good understanding of the game. So all our pro players who are involved in here, when they go and do their UKCC coaching qualifications, the actual technical knowledge side of it and tactical knowledge, they're really good at. Where they look to improve or where the coaching qualifications can help them is the whole sort of how to coach. So you might have the technical knowledge and tactical knowledge, but how to coach that is where these guys are doing their learning. Some are good at it, some may need a bit more development, and I think that's the difference between guys who are just coming into coaching from playing and guys maybe like myself who have come through doing degrees in coaching or sport and then doing a long sort of job in terms of coach development and doing my own. It's almost like an apprenticeship, if you like, doing amateur rugby, been involved in coaching for 12 years and then moving on to professional coaching.
Now, we spoke about the club game earlier. Can you just tell me, how does the club game dovetail into a professional setup like this in Scotland?
Yeah, so we've got a premiership of 10 clubs in our country. So within that premiership, it's obviously the best amateur players in the country are effectively playing in those 10 clubs. We've also got a lot of our academy boys mm-hmm. that are involved playing in those 10 clubs as well. And then also we have a draft system, so
I've heard about this. I'm fascinated to find out more.
I'll talk you through it. So in terms of how it dovetails in, the 10 clubs sit underneath the pro team, if you like. Mm-hmm. They've got their league and the Premiership. The players involved in that, as I said, are the good amateur players, some of the academy players, and then also the draft system provides players to play for those 10 clubs as well. So the way the draft works is for this year coming, we have Edinburgh and we've got Glasgow Warriors, two professional clubs. Each of those teams will have 5 teams drafted to them on a geographical basis. So we'll have tied teams, Glasgow Hawks, Ayr, Curry, etc. On the middle of August, each of the head coaches of those clubs will get in a room with the Warriors and Edinburgh, depending on what their draft is, and then they'll pick all the players in the Glasgow Warriors squad. So the team who's bottom of the 5 in terms of the, you know, who finished placing last year, mm-hmm. they'll get the first pick, and then the team who finished top in that 5 group. So for example, Ayr won the league last year, so they'll get last pick in that group of 5, and then pick, and then they'll go back to the start again until all the Warriors players have been picked, and then that becomes their draft for the season.
Now, were you involved in the draft when you were at Ayr?
Yeah, so when I was at Ayr, I was involved in the other side of the table where I had to pick my draft players.
So, for any budding Scottish rugby coaches listening to this, what is the secret to the draft? Are you looking for the guy with the most talent who you think will play the least?
Yeah, I think you need to be quite strategic. The key things for me are you need to do your homework before the draft. Mm-hmm. So you need to know the squad that you're picking from. So you need to know all the Glasgow Warriors players. You need to have an understanding of the pecking order. Mm. And that's what Scottish, what we've done over the last few years is tried to almost put them into category 1, 2 and 3. So category 1 guys are Stuart Hogg.
Yeah.
So category 1, Stuart Hogg, how much is he going to play club rugby? Never in a season, unless he was recovering from injury.
Yeah.
But unlikely to see him. Whereas a category 3 are maybe your younger pros who are just coming through a fringe. So the key thing is knowing who's the category 1, 2 and 3. You also need to be aware and alert to long-term injuries. So who's coming back from injury and then what impact that has. And then the last thing for me, it's about your team and what the sort of preferences for your team are. And one of the ways I looked at it here was, what position was it that I felt we needed a bit of cover in? If that was prop, then I just tried to pick props in the draft as much as I could. I didn't worry about picking off different positions. So I would try and pick three or four props so that I had a greater chance of getting a player in that position than I would have if I picked a prop, a lock, a 9, a 10 or whatever. So that was one of the ways I went about it in terms of being strategic and what I picked.
Yeah, because hook would make sense because you can't play five hookers in
well, that's right. You look at how many players you got for that position. So if a club generally has four hookers or four nines, you may get one of them. So I think the key thing about the draft, and I've said this to the clubs that we've worked with over the last few years, is that getting a pro player is not something you should rely on. It's not something you should plan your season on. Get the draft allows pro players to play club rugby, but you should see it almost as an additional benefit to what you've already got at your own club. As soon as you start relying on getting pro players to play for you on a regular basis, then you're in trouble, because there's so many variables that determine whether a player will get released or not. You know, so for example, if Glasgow Warriors has four hookers and we end up with one hooker injured, we've got two hookers that play regularly, that's one extra guy. How much do we want that extra guy to be playing club rugby? We can. So you have to manage and protect players a little bit. So yeah, the mindset has always been about, you know, don't treat the draft as it's something you're always going to get. Treat it like if you get a player, then it's an added bonus on top of what you've already got at your club with your own players.
You must have club coaches calling you all the time to say who you like, who you don't like, who's going to be in the team.
Well, we've tried to be a wee bit strategic with it. We'll meet the clubs before the draft.
Yeah.
So, for example, I've already sent out our list of pro players this year. So I've sent that to the clubs. So all of our squad.
Yeah.
And then what positions they are. So they can already start to look through them. Now, what I won't tell them at the moment is, or I won't tell them at all, is who's likely to play over who. Because, you know, one, we don't want information to go out, the players, plus also there's new guys in their environment. Who's to say that player A is going to be, you know, getting picked more regularly over player B? So we don't give them that information. What we have done is categorised it.
Right, but you do say tier 1, tier 2, tier 3.
Yeah, and the clubs are smart, the coaches in the clubs game are all smart. They know that if Finn Russell and Stuart Hogg are fit, right, there's no point picking them. But other guys, if there's been a player who's been long term injured, so one club may decide this year, if we, it's obviously Stuart Hogg who's got his injury post the lines, he's got a due date coming back, a club might decide to pick Stuart because they may think they might get him for a game at some point in terms of his rehab. So the clubs are quite smart, the coaches are smart.
Now, flipping that around, how often are staff from Glasgow going to watch club games? Because I imagine that's your main source of players.
Yeah, on last year's sort of basis, myself and Gregor in particular, we would get out pretty much every week depending on who we played. And the reason for that was Gregor would generally go back home at the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So he would watch a game down in the Borders. So if a Glasgow team was playing down there, so for example, if we were playing Melrose, he would go to that. And I would generally catch a game up here. And Dan McFarland as well would get out to some. Mike as well in Edinburgh, if there was a game in Edinburgh. So because with Gregor and Borders, Mike in Edinburgh, myself in Glasgow and Dan, we could always make sure the games were covered. So we there weren't a lot of weekends last year that we didn't have coaches out watching the games. But what we also have is that every game played in the Premiership, all five games that weekend, we will have that downloaded, full video downloaded for us on a Monday morning, and our analysts will tag the game, so we'll have all the clips for every player, all of our pros who played in each of those games. So we tried to, one of the things we tried to do last year was really make it, in terms of the environment, that players who play club realised that they weren't, you know, left aside and not getting the same input. So we reviewed the club game on a Monday. So in our team meeting on a Monday, Gregor would ask a few guys talk me through the air, Melrose game. So we get guys to talk about it. So we value the club game because it's important for us. Because those guys are not playing out there. They need to be playing rugby, and it's important that they're having a good experience and learning and developing from playing in a club game. So, yeah.
Have you managed to pull many guys from the clubs, say mid-season, if you've got an injury crisis, say at second row? Would you prefer to go to other professional teams?
Yeah, over the last few years we've had quite a few club players have come in. So guys who, when we've been watching the games or we've been hearing that have done well, we've invited them in for training. So last year, at the end of the season, the last block of the season, Pete McCallum, the air number 8, was playing really well, so we invited him in and he trained with us pre-season. Fraser Lyle, 2 seasons ago, he was playing for Stirling County at centre. He was playing well, so he came in and he got a contract, a 1-year contract from that, and also ended up playing Scotland Sevens. So yeah, we're really aware of what's going on in the club game, and making sure that there are guys there that are shining, then there's a vehicle for me to bring them in. And obviously, from Scottish Rugby's perspective, it's great if Scottish Rugby players are developing and moving up the sort of pipeline, if you like.
Yeah. Just moving on, I wanted to touch on last season, because from an outsider's point of view, it feels like you had a lot of success, particularly in Europe. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, you didn't make the playoffs in the Pro 12. So how did you guys review the season last year, and what are your main takeaways from it? Do you think it was successful?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. It's a good point you've made. Like, the part of the season we were successful, I thought our European run was obviously the standout success last year. So we got ourselves into that position of getting into quarter final. I think the other thing about that was the pool that we had, the pool that we got through. You know, that was a really challenging pool for us. So, you know, I think beating Racine, and I think also the Leicester games, you know, that Leicester game away where we get that huge score down at Welford Road, that was a real big success for us. The Saracens game in the European quarter final, we didn't do ourselves justice. That's our review of the game. Speaking to some of the guys, and they were chatting to some of Saracens players, They were a bit worried about getting us when they found out where they were playing us, because they knew the kind of rugby we played, they knew with the same pitch effectively. So they knew that was going to be a challenge, but we, for whatever reason that day, and we looked at different reasons why it didn't happen, but we didn't perform our capabilities, which was disappointing. And just circumstances, losing Johnny in that quarter final in the first 5 minutes didn't help us. So yeah, so that was some things in there. But in the league, we didn't have that consistency we had the years before, particularly during the international windows. I think for me that was one of the big differences from the last sort of 2 seasons, where we managed to, you know, get wins. We didn't perform in those windows. We lost some games in there we anticipated or expected to win, and I think that's what sort of really put a dent in our season.
I mean, you could argue, couldn't you, that the dip in form in the international windows is basically, you know, you're a victim of your own success there, because obviously you lose so many international players. Do you think with the European stuff, though, it's more cases of the team adjusting to being in that new, more high pressure environment in the last stages of Europe?
Yeah, I think the one thing from Europe is, you, like any team, you will generally play your best squad available for you, and that's what we did in Europe. But I just think as you said, that the level you're playing at, the teams you're playing, you know you have to perform at the absolute best of your ability to even compete with these teams, never mind beat them. And I think that's what we did, and we had that squad available. But I felt in those international windows, we didn't quite reach the performance standards that we'd hoped. And there's various reasons for that. You know, guys injured, unavailable, lack of, not performing well. There's a variety of things in there, but funny, that was probably the reason why we didn't do as well in the league last year.
Now, it's all changed this season. We've got Dave Rennie coming in. Now, can you explain to our listeners exactly how the coaching merry-go-round has worked here and, well, between here and Scotland? Because it all seems, well, there's a lot of change. Let's put that
in. Yeah, there's been a fair bit of change over the summer. So last year, the coaching team was Gregor as head coach, Dan McFarland, forwards coach, and Matt Taylor as defence coach, but also the Scotland defence coach, and I worked with Matt in defence, and Mike assisted Gregor with attack. So Gregor has moved to Scotland as head coach, Dan has moved to Scotland as forward coach, and Matt will predominantly now be the Scotland defence coach. Matt will still support Edinburgh and Glasgow a little bit in his national role, but predominantly he'll just be Scotland. So this year, Mike will still be involved with Glasgow, but do a wee bit with Scotland and skills as well. He's got a wee bit of a dual responsibility, that job. This year, Dave Rennie's come in as head coach from the Chiefs. Jason O'Halloran and Jonathan Humphreys, who were Scotland coaches last year, have come over to Glasgow. They'll be the attack coach and forwards coach respectively. I'll be doing defence and Mike will be supporting with attack. So there's a lot of change. There's also a lot of change on in other areas. So and our analyst has gone to Scotland, Gavin Vaughan. So we've got a new analyst, Toby West, and Stuart Yule, who was head of S&C, has also gone to Scotland. So we've got a new analyst, who was the chief analyst, Phil, who'll be coming over with Dave Rennie. So a lot of change. It's been a big transition for us this year. That's something we've spoken about with players, but also it's an exciting time as well, because we've got excellent coaches coming in. We've got a world-renowned head coach coming in, huge coup for Scottish rugby, and it'll be really interesting to see obviously what his view in the game is. And I think from the players and my own perspective as well, like to be working underneath Gregor and now Dave Rennie really excites us, because you know, you're getting two guys who are at the top end of the game, so I think it'll really improve the whole environment here.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for the guys who come from Scotland back here, they must be quite excited just to get back into the day-to-day development of players and the actual club scene.
Yeah, it's a different job, coaching Scotland and coaching Glasgow, and I think that's been speaking to guys like Matt Taylor last year, and because he was working between both, he sort of knows that better than anybody. But the guy like Jason and Jonathan Humphreys Humps now coming back here in the day, like it's much more hands on rather than Scotland. You have more time for planning and watching games, reviewing. This is like, you know, it's 5 days a week at the moment. It's coaching every day, it's reviewing, it's previewing. So yeah, it's a bit more full on than the national team job.
What's your favourite part of being a coach? Which aspect of the job do you enjoy most?
I think for me it's watching the players play. We do so much work during the week in terms of previewing and reviewing. We do so much work in our training, you know, the amount of effort that goes in there. And for me, like, the most enjoyable part of the day is when you sit down on a Saturday or Friday and then you watch the players play, and you particularly when you're winning, obviously, most coaches say that, but just watching them play and watching them express themselves and seeing what you've asked them to do being put into practice, I think that's the big thing for me. And I think just knowing that they're enjoying what they're doing, I think that's been always a big part of our culture the last few years, that enjoy your job, enjoy your role. Remember, Greg?
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I said a lot to players that we're all privileged whether you're a player, a coach, or a member of the management team, we're on privileged jobs, so we enjoy it while it lasts.
Yeah, it's certainly better than doing management accounting or something.
I don't know. Accountants may argue differently.
I'm sure they wouldn't. So before you came in here, you were busy doing one-to-ones about 5 minutes before you joined me.
Yeah.
What is it as a coach that you really look for as a player, and then how do you take that and try and develop that further, that player further?
I think key thing, we've been doing one-on-one since we started back pre-season, so from the first week of pre-season we've split the squad up across myself, Jason and Humps, and we've got our own group of players that we work with. So the one-to-one process has been about getting the players to be leading it. So I think that's a really important part of the one-to-one process. It's not driven predominantly by the coach. The player needs to lead it. In the initial stages, it was coach-led because, you know, getting them to open up and chat about things. We asked them to provide a couple of clips of something they were good at and asked them to provide a couple of clips of areas they need to develop. So rather than us telling them what they need to be better at or what they're good at, we asked, they reviewed their game and they came back and told us what that was. And our job is to then sort of, you know, go through the process of reviewing training, reviewing what they're doing, identifying where they're improving, where they can still make improvements. So that's been the process of the one-to-one. So what happened today is the players who came to me, they will come to me with some timings or clips from training, maybe over the last week, to talk about things they felt they've done well, but also maybe say, look, I want to look at, you know, the tracking drill we did, there's a couple in that I want you to give me some feedback on, and I'll feedback on them. At the same time, I will also have things that I've watched in training that I maybe highlight with them. So for example, for some of the forwards I spoke to us today, we looked at our defence around the ruck because there was a couple of things consistently I felt we needed to be better at. So there's a good mixture of coach to player feedback, but also what's really important, as I said, is the player leading the process.
How honest are the players when they come and see you for one-to-ones? I mean, is it often you get a player who only brings you positive clips?
No, I would actually say no, that isn't the case. I think sometimes it's the other way, that players will bring things that they think they need to get better at. Some players are pretty humble that they don't want to talk about what they do well, but whereas we're trying to encourage them to really, you know, express themselves and don't be scared to say that, yeah, I'm good at this. I also think there's a bit of a psyche in Scotland that we don't like talking ourselves up and saying we're good at things. So it's all the way about for me. We want them to be bringing things they're good at as well as not good at. But for us, we know the players and we know what they're doing at training, so we know what areas they need to work on and improve, so we can help drive it a wee bit with them.
How do you manage that transition then from a coach-led process to then player-led?
Yeah. I think one, it's about giving them the understanding of what we're looking to achieve from the process, so the one-to-one process. The one-to-one process is about helping the player improve, helping the player develop, which ultimately will help the team, so that's important. The next thing for me is about them understanding that they're in charge as well of developing their game, not just relying on, you know, a coach to develop their game. So Jonathan Humphreys, Humps doing the line out, there's a lot of thrown in with the hookers, but a big part of their job is to review their own game and then feedback the Humps on, you know, what the process of the throwing was, what was good, what wasn't. So they need to understand that's part of the role, and then maybe just giving them a bit of support and expertise around how we did that at the start of the season. This is how you review training, this is how you clip some clips, this is how you can slow-mo it down and speed it up. So we give them all that information, so the players are pretty good now. They're confident watching games, training, taking clips, bringing clips to us or bringing times to us, and just making them good. I think the relationship needs to be a really relaxed relationship as well, in the sense that a player needs to be comfortable and to be honest with you. Well, they know that, you know, they can say to you something in confidence that, you know, they're not going to get a barracking about, or, you know, they can have a conversation rather than something different.
So if a player identifies, say, a weakness in a certain thing, how much of the week do you dedicate to letting them just go off and work on that, and work on their own thing? Or is it something they've got to do in their own time?
Well, what we've done this year in pre-season, we have our coaching programme for a week, obviously, which is quite an intense programme from Monday to Friday. We've introduced at the start of this season what we call Warrior 30. So that's four afternoons a week. There's a warrior at the end of the day. So if we finish training at 3, for example, there's a Warrior 30 time. And within that Warrior 30 time, that's a player-led individual skill development session. And it's up to the players what they want to do. So some players will do kicking. So the kickers may do goal kicking. Some will do kicking from hand. The hookers will do a lot of throwing in that period. Some guys will come and work on defence, tracking, or tackle technique. What we'll also do now and again is we'll say, right, I'm going to do a defence session, non-contact, on tracking or whatever it is, and then invite guys to come to it. If there's specifics that they've picked up with guys over a week or two that we know they need to work on, then we'll maybe pick them off. But we try and get it so that the coaches are all in the park, available for coaching, but we'll let the guys sort of determine what they want to do, and that's worked pretty well because you've got everybody on the pitch doing their own individual development. So that's the way we get them to develop individual skills.
Now, individual development is undoubtedly very important. But as a coach, how much of your time do you like to dedicate to the actual team shape and attack and things like attacking patterns? Mm-hmm. And in your mind, do you have a good ratio, say, 40% on individual and 60% on team drills, or how do you break that up?
I think it's tough to put a percentage on. I think the key things for me in developing your team attack shape is you need to build it up. So this time of season is a good time to build up your attack shape. So you can do more sort of small number exercises. You can build your attack shape into your games. So we're doing a lot of conditioning games at the moment. But what we can do is we can also condition them to develop our attack shape into them. So although the games are working in conditioning, there's also an element within those games of developing your attack shape within it. So there's not like this is attack shape, this is games, this is development. So we'll try and build it up through learning in here. So for example, today Jason's given a presentation on attack shape. When we do before each session on a Tuesday and a Thursday, we've got a half hour, what we call a half hour skill development window. And that's what we would do, maybe attack shape and defence in there. So we're getting a good window in there. When we get into the games in the afternoon, we've got attack in those games and shaping those games. And then in the unit sessions in the morning, that'll be maybe more line out and then maybe back attack and shape. So right throughout the day, depending on the sessions, there's always attack shape in there. So I would say it's involved in everything we do to a lesser extent or another. It's not like, right, we're going to do 20% of attack shape in the morning this week and then that's it. So there's a lot of it, and skill development is, individual skill development is there every day in those half hour windows, but also in a Wednesday morning we do static skill development as well. So
now, without giving away any secrets to anyone that might be listening, what is the Glasgow attack shape? Can you describe how you want the boys to play?
Yeah, I mean, I think anybody who's watched Glasgow over the last 5 years would be able to give you a good overview of our attack shape. So we're a real high-paced, high-tempo attack. Really, really big on players expressing themselves.
How do you achieve that high tempo?
Key thing for us in high tempo one is individual skills. So individual skills comes from the ball carry. Mm-hmm. So we talked last year about, in terms of getting quick ball, 60% of that is about what the ball carrier does.
Is this a 60-40?
Yeah, so 60% is what the ball carrier does, and another sort of 20-20 is what the first two support players do. So the ball carrier doesn't do his job in terms of winning a collision, ball presentation, and then the support players don't do their job in terms of body height and clearing threats, then that affects the speed of ball. So individual skills in terms of ball carrying and evasion, that's one. Ball presentation, the ground's one. Roll clarity at ruck. So these things all build up to giving you speed of ball. Also a catch pass, we've had a massive focus over, and even this year as well, huge focus on catch pass skills. So if you watch Glasgow, you'll see that forwards are really comfortable getting themselves into positions, playing off nine where they can catch it and tip it on, or catch it and pass it. Not just on our 10s or 12s, but all of our players are comfortable passing under pressure. We do a lot of work last year on what we called our pup drill, P-U-P, pup drill, which is a passing under pressure drill. And we would do that regularly, week to week, so the players are really confident. So in terms of high tempo rugby and playing the game at speed, the key thing about that is individual skill development and ability to do that. And then after that, it's about your shape and your organisation. And then that's how you want to play the game, how you want to play off 9, how you want to play off 10, and it's getting that good mixture of what you want to do. So yeah, that would probably be the key thing for us. And also the big thing, and that was one thing Gregor was really big on, was about players, you know, expressing themselves. So seeing space, taking space, and executing what we're doing. So
if I watch Glasgow play tomorrow, how much different would what I was seeing look compared to when you were coaching at Ayr? And did you bring a lot of continuity from your style of play there to here, or was it just completely different because you're in the professional ranks?
Obviously my role at Glasgow's been defence, so it's really been focusing on defence, and Gregor's led the attack here as a head coach. So I think from here, like, you know, what I was pleased with when I came here is that a lot of the stuff, because I was a head coach at Ayr, a lot of stuff I've been doing at Ayr, or looking to try and develop it as I was going through the 5 years, was sort of prevalent in this environment.
Yeah.
And I think that came out of my interview for the job as well, when Gregor interviewed me, when he was asking me a lot of questions, that I could see then by the questions he was asking me how he wanted to play the game. So it was really good about, you know, for me at Ayr, I tried to play a really high tempo offloading game where we kept the ball moving, we get the ball off the ground quickly, and we really asked questions of defence in terms of speed of ball. So there was a lot of that here with me, so it was really pleasing for me to see that. But as people have talked about before, Gregor's a real strategist when it comes to attack. Like, he knows exactly how he wants the attack to go and to play. He's really detailed in that, about, you know, ball carrying, about running lines, about timing, and I think that's what made the Glasgow attack so strong over the recent years, as well as keeping back to developing individual skill set of your players to enable you to do that.
So we'll just run back to the transition from Gregor over to Dave Rennie. How difficult has it been, if it's difficult at all? And how much of last year's Glasgow are we likely to see going forward to this year?
Yeah, I think any transition poses different challenges, whether it's a transition of staff or head coach, whatever it is. So what we're trying to do to minimise that as much as possible is have lots of communication. So right from the start, before pre-season started, Dave came over. So he was over twice for two visits, where he met the coaches, had a chat to them and started to talk about planning. Towards the end of the season, when we were in the last month of the season, Jason and Humps, who had Scotland programme had finished by then, because the Six Nations was complete, they both went and spent a week with Dave in South Africa, where all the Chiefs were in South Africa. So they probably spent a week with Dave just to get a feel for how he was coaching and what he was expecting, so they could start to, they would then come back and in pre-season to get an idea of what that was and could start to get key messages across. As well as that, since the start of pre-season, we've done lots of Skype meetings. So some of them between Dave and the coaches, and then others between Dave and the whole group. So maybe every 2 weeks we'd have a Skype with Dave and the players. And the big thing about that was about alignment, making sure that the players really understood that the coaches were all aligned with each other in terms of what Dave was expecting and what we were delivering, and then just making sure those key messages were given. In terms of next year, I think Dave's very much similar to Gregor in terms of, I think, you watch the Chiefs play compared to Glasgow, very, very similar attack.
Yeah.
Real fast pace, high intensity, big emphasis on ball carrying. So, you know, winning game line, winning collisions, keeping the ball moving, speed of ball is really important. You see the Chiefs playing wide channels a lot, so really try to pick off teams in wide channels. So, you know, I would expect this year that there'll be similar things in our attack, but there'll be differences in our attack as well. And I think defensively, we'll try and build on what we've done defensively. There's areas there we need to improve. The new laws will put different challenges in as well this year. So yeah, there's going to be things we need to change this year.
Just on that, because I do a bit of coaching myself and I've got a very high level coach in front of me, which of the laws do you think are going to impact, which of the law changing, sorry, Which of the law changes this year do you think is going to impact the game the most, and what do you think can be done to combat it?
I think the interesting one will be the scrum again. I think the law where, or the new law sort of, where the referee will no longer tell the nine to put the ball in. So I think that'll be an interesting one, because nine now basically determines when that ball goes into the scrum and when that scrum's stable. So I think there'll be, you know, a bit of to and fro with that initially. So that could be a one that I think will have a lot of problems at the start. I think it's interesting with number eight's now being able to pick the ball out the second row's feet. So if you can get a good hook, good strike, and then hook the eight can get that up, then suddenly your eight can be up and away much, much quicker. So again, if you attack, that could put interesting ones in. I think defensively, there's the tackle now is changing a little bit. So tackler now must get back onside before he can attempt to play the ball. So whereas before you would have a situation where, you know, the tackler tackles the ball carrier in isolation, all he had to do was get up and he could play the ball pretty much right away. He now has to get onside before he can play the ball. So the whole tackle and jackal will change a bit. So I think defensive coaches now, and we've been looking at it in pre-season, will start to think about how do you shape a defensive strategy. Do you still get players tackling and attempting to jackal, or do you tackle and roll out of there and let another player come and contest the possession?
Do you think that's what will happen? You'll effectively get a guy tackling the attacking player and it'll be the next guy that jackals and
I think that's a big part of a lot of team strategies as well, that, you know, the hunt defender, the player on the inside will look to try and pressure the ball, but so a lot of teams always have the tackler working to get back up and try to compete. I think that's going to be minimal now, because the referees are going to be hard on you getting back onside and not being allowed to stand in that channel either, blocking the attacks and poor players come in. So that was an interesting one. And also the ruck. The ruck, obviously, the sort of definition of the ruck has changed effectively. So a ruck now is basically when one player is over the tackle or over the ball, rather than one player from either side over the ball on the ground. So I think an example of that is, you know, my team kicked chase or kicked the ball to the opposition up there. One of their guys catches it, but I make a good tackle on him. And then I get my support player. So I'm on the ground, my support player gets in and gets over the ball. That is now a ruck. Whereas before that wouldn't have been a ruck, because you needed one player from the defence there. So if I go in and get over that ball and form a ruck, the offside line is now there, which means every single player getting back onside for the defence is offside until they get back behind the back foot there. So, basically, you know, if I kick chase, get a good tackle, get a guy in support quickly, anybody coming back now is offside. So if they interfere with any of the ball or passing be made, they will all be offside.
Oh yeah.
So if you can get good quick ball from that ruck, you can really pick off defenders, either get a penalty or, which means you need to work really hard now on any kick chase.
So kick chase is going to become a lot more of an effective weapon.
A lot more effective weapon, and also you need to work much harder to get back behind. So cause sometimes, you know, if a tackle was made, even if one guy was over, there was no really an offside, there was no ruck there, so players could just sort of get back a wee bit slower. But now you need to get back. So, and also I think the interesting one will be now in that situation with a long kick and there's a tackle made. If it's the next guy that breaks down is a jackal defender, he gets on ball. As soon as anybody else in attack comes there and makes contact with him, he's got to release it.
Right, okay, yeah. I was wondering about that because I wasn't sure if it just meant that the jackal can continue to hold, but as soon as now he's touched, he's got to go.
So it used to be, though, if you could jackal and get in the ball quickly and just hold it there, and somebody was slow, you would probably win that ball because you were there first. But now, if you get on the ball and jackal, as soon as somebody comes in and makes contact with you from the opposition side, you must release that ball.
From an attacking point of view, you must be delighted.
Well, we were discussing that over the last few days. Like, it does seem to be preference for the attack. But I think there's a couple of things in it. Like, we were speaking to Chris Patterson. Chris was on the laws planning group, as was Dave Rennie, interestingly enough. And a lot of it is about, you know, discipline, and it's also about tidying up the tackle and ruck, and a lot of it's about injury prevention. So if you watch a game now, when a Jackler gets on ball really well and is in a low volley position, you're seeing players come in absolutely hammering them. That's a concern for World Rugby. So what they're trying to get to now to really stop things like that is, I go in a Jackal, I'm the only guy there other than the tackle and a tackle player. What they want me to do is to get in, and rather than just holding the ball and trying and sort of stowing it, get in and actually get the ball out of there, pick it out of there. So if you don't pick it out of there immediately,
it's to stop the guy holding that position.
So they want you in, try and steal the ball and pick it out and get it to someone in your team. If you get in and hold it and then you get contact, then you release it, you're not going to win the ball. So if you want to win the ball as a Jackal, you've effectively got to get in and get your hands in it and move it right away. Or else you won't. Or else you'll need to release it.
It's a huge advantage to teams with plastic pitches, that's for sure, because you make so few skill errors on plastic pitch compared to a normal pitch.
Yeah, I don't know. We made a few last year, to be fair. But I think it is, and that's. I think for us now, and we'll do a laws presentation probably this week to players. But for us as coaches, we need to look at how do we maximise these laws to get the best advantage for our attack and our defence. So things like that with the Jackal on, you know, you need to do a lot more work now when the Jackal defender getting over ball, and rather than just getting on ball transition, getting it really, really fighting the ball out of there. So
you think we'll see a lot more turnovers, but a lot less penalties?
Potentially, you know, and that's what they're trying to do, I suppose, World Rugby a wee bit in terms of the discipline side of it. So yeah, there's a lot in there, and even little things like, you know, that when the time's up at the end of the game or half time, you can kick to a penalty. If you want the game to end, you've got to tap it and kick it out. So you need to make sure the players are all aware of that, and particularly under fatigue, when players start to get a bit tired and forget about these things, you've got to make sure they're really alert to it as well. So a lot of work to do in pre-season to make sure they're aware of the laws.
Excellent. Right, well, you've been more than generous with your time. Before you go, just give me a prediction of what you think would be a good season for Glasgow Warriors.
Yeah, I think obviously it's a performance environment at this level. So for us, it's again getting into the top four playoffs, and then from that, trying to, you know, get into that final again. But definitely the target will be the top four playoffs again. And I think also, we've got a really exciting group in Europe this year, so, you know, going to Montpellier will be an interesting one. We've got our old foes Leinster again, so we've always had tough games against them. And then I think obviously Exeter down there, look, we played them pre-season down there a few years ago and really enjoyed it, and they play a really good brand of rugby, so we're excited to be going there. But, you know, yeah, getting into knockout stages of Europe again would be a real bonus for us, but definitely that top four.
Fantastic. Right, well, I'll be watching your progress with very keen interest, so
thank you. No worries. No, that's fine, no problem at all.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.